है और वही होता है जो मंजूरे खुदा होता है। गुड मॉर्निंग एवरीवन और नमस्ते, नमस्कार, सीताराम और अस्सलामु अलैकुम एंड अ वेरी वार्म वेलकम टू योर अर्ली मॉर्निंग एडिशन ऑफ शबनम एंड स्पेशली डिजाइंड टू असिस्ट यू विद योर अर्ली मॉर्निंग चोर्स एंड टू पुट यू इन ए पॉजिटिव एंड गुड फ्रेम ऑफ माइंड एंड टू ऑल्सो इग्नाइट स्पार्क्स ऑफ स्पिरिचुअल इंस्पिरेशन टू यू एंड योर लव्ड वंस। जहां कहीं आप मौजूद हो अपने कामों से जरा सी मुहलत लेकर इन मस्तानों को सुनने के लिए तैयार हो जाइए। और ऐ बहारे बाग अरुणिया चंद रोज देख लो इसका तमाशा चंद रोज और ऐ मुसाफिर कूचका सामान कर इस सलामे है बसेरा चंद रोज।
सीताराम सत श्री अकाल जय गुरु दत्ता साईं राम अस्सलाम वालेकुम गुड आफ्टरनून एंड वेलकम एवरीबॉडी वेलकम टू शबनम रेडियो 770 एएम वी आर इंडीड आल्सो वी कुड बी हर्ड ऑन shabnamradio.com एंड आल्सो सिंपली बाय डायलिंग 647-557-1017। व्हाट अ प्रोग्राम वी हैव लाइन अप फॉर यू। होप योर वीकेंड इज ऑफ टू अ गुड स्टार्ट। On today's program, we will be speaking to Minister Winston Joran, Minister of Finance of Guyana, and he will be my guest around 1:30 today, so please help us spread the word. He would be sharing some interesting information in interesting times indeed. Once again, we say hello and welcome again. Looking forward to hear from those of you listening to us. From the very beginning of the program, always love to hear from you. Give me a quick call, 416-620-1778. That's 416-620-1778. Get ready for 2 hours of non-stop entertainment. My name is Richard Aziz. The telephone number to reach us at the studio, 416-620-1778. Currently, it's raining with plus 2 degrees on the outside. Be careful if you're on the highways and byways. Naresh Prasad, welcome. Hey Geeta, and not forgetting the girls, thank you for listening.
रात भर बाजीगर मैं बाजीगर, दिल वालों का मैं दिलबर, बाजीगर मैं बाजीगर, दिल वालों का मैं दिलबर, ओ दिल लेके दिल दिया है सौदा प्यार का किया है, दिल की बाजी जीता दिल हार कर,
बाजीगर ओ बाजीगर तू है बड़ा जादूगर, तू मेरे दिल में समाया, चाहत का जादू जगा के मुझको दीवाना बनाया,
पहली नजर में बनी है तू मेरे सपनों की रानी, याद रखेगी ये दुनिया अपनी वफा की कहानी,
ओ मेरा चैन चुरा के मेरी नींदें उड़ा के खो न जाना किसी मोड़ पर,
बाजीगर मैं बाजीगर, दिल वालों का मैं दिलबर,
बाजीगर ओ बाजीगर तू है बड़ा जादूगर,
ओ दिल लेके दिल दिया है सौदा प्यार का किया है, दिल की बाजी जीता दिल हार कर,
बाजीगर ओ बाजीगर,
बाजीगर मैं बाजीगर,
don't forget if you're in the area, drop by and check out Cabana. Cabana Restaurant and Lounge. They are now under new management and lots of new things happening. Check them out. They're at 1590 Dundas Street in Mississauga.
धड़कता है ये दिल,
बोलो ना क्या कह रहा है,
पास आओ बता दूं।
Hey, coming up in a minute, we'll be speaking to the brother who is assisting with that mosque project we've been telling you about in Aruba. The first masjid that will be erected. Stay tuned, he's coming up in a few minutes. Stay right here, 770 AM WTOR.
दिल की दीवारों पे मैंने नाम लिखा है तुम्हारा,
ओ तेरे प्यार में कुर्बान मेरा दिल, मेरी जान तुझे लग जाए मेरी उम्र, बाजीगर ओ बाजीगर।
As we welcome indeed our brother Faruqi and sister Shireen. All our online listeners out of Guyana, Manripo is in the house. Always locked on. Princess Song, St. Madeline, Trinidad, how you doing? Can't forget our local guys, our taxi drivers. our friends in the trucking business, and you and yours. Welcome, everybody. Well, beautiful music kicking us off here on a rainy day. Hope you stay dry. A little showers to melt some of the snow. How about that? We want to say Assalamualaikum and welcome to Brother Asif to Shabnam Radio. Brother Asif, Assalamualaikum. How are you doing?
Welcome, Muhammad. Alhamdulillah, I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Alhamdulillah, just getting started, and I wanted to get you on early on the program so we can tell our listeners a little bit about this great initiative that not only you but our brothers and sisters out in Aruba. If you could just give us a little background quickly, and the construction of the masjid to our listeners, just as you would have explained it to myself, a brief overview of what's happening in Aruba with this construction of the new masjid.
Sure, Alhamdulillah, it's a great cause. I mean, these brothers have taken an opportunity to build the first mosque in the island of Aruba. If those of you don't know, Aruba is a small island just above Venezuela. It's 33 kilometers long, about 10 kilometers wide, so a small one. You know, and a few hundred Muslims are there, and they are growing as the time goes by. But for the last two decades, you know, they've prayed in little offices and warehouses and garages and even in the front of a yard of members of the mosque, Muslim community. And, you know, a group of Muslim brothers and sisters, less than, you know, a dozen of them, decided, you know what, let's build a mosque together. And in May of 2019, they started this construction of the first mosque on the island. There has never been one. You know, and this is, it's truly history in the making to have this opportunity there. And they started building it, and the news came to me, you know, through Brother Shafiq. Brother Shafiq sent a message to me. He's actually related to my wife. He's my wife's uncle, and that's how I got the message. And that was in August of last year. And when I got it, you know, I, like everybody else, I took it and I saw it and put it to the side. But, you know, I decided, after looking at it again and some experience with my grandfather, I'd say, you know what, I want to do more. I want to be able to be a part of something greater. And being the first mosque being built there, I took the opportunity, I jumped on a plane, I went in August. And the experience that I had there to see these brothers and sisters working together, hand by hand, step by step, you know, building the mosque on their own was amazing. It was truly, truly amazing. So I decided to come back here and reach out to the community, reach out to my families, my friends, you know, my members, the community members in the area, my neighbors, Muslims, non-Muslims, and talk about this opportunity, you know, that's available to us. And went from there and just start talking to people to raise funds. And didn't expect to be where we are today, but alhamdulillah, it's been a support. And we're continuing to try to, you know, raise more funds for them because they are doing it on them, by themselves.
And as of to date, how much money you were able to raise, and what else is needed?
So the goal, my goal was, you know, very small. You know, I'm just a volunteer, and I wanted to raise $9,800 for them. So to, when I go back in April, because I already booked my tickets to go back to April to help them, was to take that back. But with the support of the community, we've raised over $27,000.
MashaAllah.
You know, and that's with the, this is not me, but this is everybody speaking to me. I've talked to Jamatul Ansar, Brother Shah there, you know, and with the mosque and the whole community coming together, you know, and everybody talking to everybody, seeing this, I'm showing them, they can see pictures. You can go on Facebook and look up Aruba Islamic Foundation, and you can see over 900 pictures, including this morning, you know, as we speak right now, they're at the site. After their full-time job, they go and work on the site. So right now, we were just over $27,000. We're creeping to $28,000, you know, and the goal, their goal to complete the project is about $243,000 Canadian. So we're still far away. We're still far away. But we are working.
The construction is off the ground at the foundation. Some walls already going up. I believe the money you raise also would be going towards the purchasing of steel beams, and some money would set aside especially for carpeting, etc. So friends, we have an opportunity to assist in this project. To answer more questions, but Asif would be happy to take your call. So if you could give him a call, his number is 416-838-6931. That's 416-838-6931. You can reach out to me. I'd get that information. The Facebook page again, brother, is
It's Aruba Islamic Foundation.
And of course, you could go to Aruba Islamic Foundation. And it's a very humbling project. And, you know, they wanted to get it completed so they could read Tarawih Salah there. So hopefully we can help them with that. So if anyone would like to get involved, again, call Brother Asif, 416-838-6931. Every little bit will help. And it's a very transparent project. The brothers are so grateful. And, of course, Brother Asif would be able to guide you and answer all your questions. Brother Asif, anything else in closing?
No, that's it. I really appreciate the opportunity. Inshallah, I will reach everybody's hearts and minds to see it. And like you said, you know, we are very transparent to see, to show everybody. We want everybody to know and see that anything that you want, any question you have, it will be answered. You know, and if it's, we're there for you. We're here for us together to help them. It's to help them, you know. And you can, anybody, they can call me. They can also text me if they feel comfortable.
All right. Well, thank you very much, and we'll wait for an update and in the next couple of months to hear where we're at with this project. Thank you very much, Brother. May Allah reward you for your efforts.
Thank you, Brother Aziz. Thank you so much for your help.
Assalamu alaikum.
Welcome. Assalam.
This is Shabnam Radio, 770 AM WTOR. Hey, of course, we want to say hello to our friends at Jazz Food listening to us this morning. We want to welcome them indeed. Jazz Food, don't forget to drop by. You know, really, really, really great service, and they would love to see you. Drop by and visit with our friends at Jazz Supermarket.
Jazz Supermarket in Brampton is the preferred place to shop for all your Caribbean grocery needs. You are guaranteed fresh fruits and vegetables as shipments arrive twice a week. Whether you're sending a barrel, money, or just need to find a certain ingredient to get that back home taste, Jazz Supermarket has it all. You can even stock up with poultry or meat from the halal meat counter, CDs, gift items, or fresh bread and pastries from the bakery. Caribbean jewelry and ready-made casual clothing now available. Senior discount card holders get a 5% discount. Come visit Jazz Supermarket, 9025 Torbram Road at the corner of Queen and Torbram in Brampton, where friendly service awaits you.
Brampton Crematorium and Visitation Center provides a complete range of cremation and memorial services. With customized exclusive facilities, Brampton Crematorium and Visitation Center, together with Ajax Crematorium and Visitation Center, two facilities serving one community. Brampton Crematorium and Visitation Center, Titi Bramwin Court in Brampton, and Ajax Crematorium and Visitation Center, 384 Finlay Avenue in Ajax. Call us at 905-458-2222 and speak to our funeral director, available 24 hours, 7 days a week.
Life Auto Collision, a family-owned and operated auto body shop with over 35 years in the industry, specializing in collision repairs, painting, and refinishing. At Life Auto Collision, they pride themselves on exceptional customer service and high-quality work guaranteed at affordable prices. Whether it's for a full-body repair, touch-ups, insurance claim, or lease returns, drop by at 266 Rutherford Road South, Unit 24, just off the 410 and Steeles in Brampton. Visit online, www.lifeautobody.com. Call Andy or Krish at 416-629-0933.
For all your life's issues related to business, health, family, depression, marriage, wealth, or drinking, come to Pandit Nandaji.
Pandit Nandaji, an expert in palm reading, removing of black magic, evil spirits, and jadu.
Call world-famous astrologer Pandit Nandaji for all your problems at 647-822-9607. That's 647-822-9607. Located at Queen and Kennedy, 212 Queen Street East in Brampton.
The Shiva Ganesh Mandir at 16 Regal Road, Unit Number 44 in Brampton, cordially invite you and your family to attend a 9 session of Shiva Puran Yajna, commencing on Saturday, 15th of February, and concluding on the 23rd. Remember, time is from 6 to 9 p.m. nightly, and the last day, Sunday, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Officiating brilliant pundit out of Trinidad and Tobago, Narad Gosain. Please make an effort to attend. For more information, call Brother Bansing, 416-409-7464. Until then, Jai Sitaram.
तारी करे नंदी की सवारी भोलेनाथ रे शंकर नाथ रे मेरा भोला है भंडारी करे नंदी की सवारी शंभोनाथ रे शंकर नाथ रे तेरा नाम है तारनहारा एक तू ही है पालनहारा भोलेनाथ रे शंकर नाथ रे मेरे साथ रे तू मेरे साथ रे तमाम सृष्टि का सार तू है विकार तू निर्विकार तू है कहूँ क्या बारे में तेरे भोले असीम तू है अपार तू है
असीम तू है अपार
शंभो है वास तेरा निगाह में भी निवास तेरा समाए दिल में है तेरी सूरत वजूद मुझ में है खास तेरा गंगा सोहे जिसके केशा करता मंगल जो हमेशा भोलेनाथ रे शंकर नाथ रे तू ही त्रिपुरारी कैलाशी तू ही दुख भंजन अविनाशी शंभोनाथ रे शंकर नाथ रे मेरा भोला है भंडारी जिसे पूजे दुनिया सारी भोलेनाथ रे शंकर नाथ रे मेरे साथ रे तू मेरे साथ रे उदासियों को मिटा दिया है चिराग दिल में जला दिया है हमेशा से भोलेनाथ तूने सुख का रास्ता दिखा दिया है नहीं है कोई सिवाय तेरे बने हैं हम तो बनाए तेरे अगम भी तू है सुगम भी तू है के लिए सब रचाए तेरे प्याला दुनिया को अमृत दे डाला भोलेनाथ रे शंकर नाथ रे कुल सृष्टि का चक्र चलाए बिन गौरा आधा कहलाए शंभोनाथ रे शंकर नाथ रे मेरा भोला है भंडारी करे नंदी की सवारी भोलेनाथ रे शंकर नाथ रे मेरे साथ रे तू मेरे साथ रे नमामि परमेश्वराय शंकर नमामि सर्वेश्वराय शंकर नमामि योगेश्वराय शंकर नमामि भुवनेश्वराय शंकर
नमामि भुवनेश्वराय
मेरा भोला है भंडारी कर नमामि सर्वेश्वराय भोलेनाथ योगेश्वराय शंकर नमामि भुवनेश्वराय शंकर
नमामि भुवनेश्वराय
मेरे साथ रे तू मेरे साथ रे मेरे
शब्दम रेडियो विया
तू मेरे साथ रे
Oh 770 WTRs, we are indeed. Thank you, and a beautiful, beautiful one. And a rainy Saturday, 2 degrees. You know, I was speaking to a friend of mine just coming into the studio, and I was saying, I was so looking forward to coming in today to do the program. We here would have many times music, devotional, religious stuff, conversation. But, you know, whenever somebody even called in for a birthday greeting, I would ask them, tell your mommy how much you love them, now boy. Oh, by the way, where you met your wife? I know, try to have conversation, because I believe you could play your music on YouTube, on CDs, but sit down and have a conversation and old talk and blag a little bit. And especially with weather like this, it makes so much sense. So we want to welcome you if you're just joining us. We are about to engage in a conversation with the Honorable Minister of Finance, Mr. Winston Jordan. And first, I just want to give you a brief overview of who we are about to talk to. Mr. Winston Jordan, BSc Economics, MS Economics, Minister of Finance of the Republic of Guyana, South America. Winston De Costa Jordan is a practicing economist who has been serving Guyana for over 35 years. He is a former head of the Budget Office and Minister of Finance, and he began his career as State Planning Secretariat in 1984. His significant previous position includes country analysis in the Economic Intelligence Unit, the EIU, in 2009 to 2015, the Technical Coordinator in the Public Management Modernization Program, IDB, 2006 to 2008. From 1985 to 2008, he worked extensively with the Ministry of Finance in various portfolios as Budget Economic Advisor, Budget Specialist, Advisor in Budgeting, Budgeting in Public Investment Specialist, and Director of Budget. Minister Jordan graduated from the University of Guyana with a Bachelor of Science degree, with distinction, I might add, and successfully pursued his Master's in Economics in the University of Warwick, England. He also holds a certificate in Budgeting Structural Adjustment from Penn State University and a certificate of Public Sector Budgeting from Harvard University. He has taught at the University of Guyana and is as well as serve as Director of the Board of Gearbank Bauxite Development Company Limited, Bidco, Guyana Cooperative Financial Services. Additionally, he served as an alternate director at the Caribbean Development Bank and as well as temporary governor at the alternate governor to the IDB, the CDB, and the IMF World Bank Group. He's a distinguished, educated, accomplished man indeed, and his qualification is recognized nationally, internationally. It is indeed my honor to welcome him to the program, a family man indeed, a father of three, and I am so very much honored this morning to have him in the studios with us. Welcome, Minister Jordan. Welcome to Shabnam Radio. Welcome to Toronto.
Thank you very much, and I'm happy to be here and have an opportunity to engage with you and your listeners.
Well, first of all, what brings you to Toronto?
Okay, I went to Ottawa
to have some discussions with the Caribbean Banknote. You know, the Caribbean Banknote has been in Guyana for a while, and they're in a number of areas. They're in the area of lottery, they're in the area of passports, they print our passports. We've just given them a contract to do our border management system and e-passports. And they're also in stamps. We do tobacco stamps and alcohol, so they're also in that. So there are a number of other areas. So the Lotto, for which they have been there in Guyana for quite a while, they have an exclusive, they have a monopoly on the Lotto in Guyana. And what has happened in recent times, they are noticing what they call encroachment in their areas, you know, and they are concerned that their investment, for which they have an agreement with the government and for which they have been faithfully executing, is being eroded by these, what they may call, illegals. They're not necessarily illegals, but they're actually coming into the market. And so they wanted us to really have a sit down and understand what is happening here and how both of us, the government and them, can work together to make certain that what we have signed to is actualized without...
Just off topic now, because this is something new to me. Seeing that they... How long now this agreement was in place?
Oh, yes. The agreement has been in place since the previous government. Since 1990.
That is the PPP Civic?
Yes, yes. Yeah. The agreement was first put in place when the PPP was in government.
And I just have one question. Wouldn't competition improve services and quality, having and giving them the monopoly?
That is so. But sometimes in small markets, you don't attract the kind of investment you wish if you're talking about competition. You know, in big markets, competition are fine, but small markets, you know, it's not as attractive if you don't add sweeteners to it, really.
Well, boy, talking about sweeteners and contracts, I don't want to waste any of your time and the limited time we have. You know, you serve as Minister of Finance. There's so much I want to talk to, because I'm sure you are one of the most sought after persons in the region, because I saw a YouTube video where the Arnold McIntyre, he is the IMF mission chief of Guyana, and very, very interesting stuff indeed. So I'm happy that you take the time to talk to us and our listeners today. Under your stewardship, I know the government was interrupted about a year ago. What could you say or claim to fame as what you and your ministry has done for the past the term in office when you under your stewardship?
Yes. Well, thank you much for the question. I think we could lay claim to the fact that we have got the economy growing in the context of very low inflation, and also being able to do some physical work on the country as it relates to implementation of the public sector, a very large public sector investment program that has touched every part of the country, not just Georgetown, but has touched areas that have never been touched before. You don't know Guyana as much, but we are a country of 83,000 square miles or 215,000 square kilometers, but most of the economic and other activities concentrated on the coast, and whereas the hinterland and rural areas are cut off mostly from the coast, you have to fly in there small planes. So we have been able to improve access by putting in infrastructure, substantial infrastructure in the hinterland. So because one of our key objectives is bridging the divide between the coast and the hinterland, and we continue to do a lot about that. And we also continue to bring services that only Georgetown would have known. So you outsource things like passports, birth certificate, where everybody had to come to Georgetown before you put those services in the rural areas and in the hinterland also. So that's one. We lay claim to substantial improvement in the human capacity. We've been able to increase salaries, for example, over that period by over 77%. The previous government, to do that, they would have taken anywhere between 9 and 12 years. We have done it in 3.5 years at a higher base, to be quite honest. We have improved access to scholarships. Over 1,000 scholarships have been given out in that short period of time. So to a large and diverse set of people, not only Georgetown based or so on. So I think we could lay claim to 1 billion an economy that is more structured and stabilized, as opposed to what we would have met in 2015.
Well, you know, lately with your last budget, and we talk on the topic of oil and gas, the economy critics have said that your budget has squeezed the small man, like increasing the cost for license, the dairy carts and land taxes. You also, while you reduce VAT, there are still some essential items like baby products that has VAT on the list. You also ban the use of used car tires, forcing people to buy new tires, which is presenting a hardship to car owners and the small man. How would you defend those changes?
Well, first of all, your last statement is absolutely not true. Let me tell you something. We were importing on average 10,000 cars a year. Yes, we have banned used tires. Again, it's not a used tire country. Okay, but at the time when we banned them, we significantly reduced the duties on new tires. Asking people to use new tires, which will create less accidents, number one, and number two, better on the environment. Secondly, we ban any car that is 8 years and over 8 years. Again, we didn't want, Guyana is not a junkyard, and we don't want these cars over 8 years coming into Guyana. And I can tell you, there has been no slowdown in imports. The average imports of cars remains at 10,000. So I don't know if the small man has been squeezed, why the imports of cars will remain this more or less the same as it was previous to the ban. Secondly, when we came in, VAT was 16%. We have been able to reduce VAT to 14%. The threshold for VAT was $10 million. We've been able to increase the threshold to $15 million. So a lot of people out of that. When we came in, a number of items were exempt. We put them to zero rated. I will tell you this quickly. In 2016 or 2017, two young females came to me during the budget conversations that we have with different groups, and they represented the Georgetown Chamber of Commerce and Industry. And they said, "Mr. Minister, can you do something about feminine napkins?" I said, "What talking about?" She said, "They attract VAT." This was in 2016, I think it was. And I said, "Look, right away, this is not right. I mean, this is a necessary product and so on. And I'm sorry it's attracting VAT. I will remove the VAT." And right away, we went to remove VAT. You could, it's unfortunate that you didn't get a chance to look at items that had VAT before versus that the items that got VAT, that don't have VAT afterward and so on. But there are a number of items that attracted VAT that we remove. There are a number of items that did not attract VAT that we put on the VAT list, simply because when we were reducing the rate and so on, we intended to broaden the base, and that has accomplished what we wanted. I know sometimes people only look at that, but have they told you that, for example, we have reduced the tax, the corporate tax on manufacturing, from 33% to what it is today, 25%. And we have indicated that that will go down to 20% in our next 5 years, at least 20%. Have they indicated that in terms of the income tax, when we came in, you were entitled to $600,000 tax-free per annum. Today, it's $780,000, or one-third of your gross income, whichever is higher. In fact, I have had two of my ministers in the Caribbean asking me to tell them how does it work, because they're attracted to it. You don't have to keep shuffling the income tax every year as you increase salaries and so on. So if you were earning $300,000, in 2015, your free pay would have only been $50,000 per month. And you'd have to pay tax one-third on the rest of $250,000. Today, if you earn in that same $300,000, you're entitled to take one-third as your free pay. So right away, $100,000 is what you will take instead of $50,000. Secondly, quickly, the $200,000 that is left, you pay 28%. On the first $180,000 per month, and the rest at 40%. So you will pay the $20,000 at 40%, and the $180,000 at 28%. So you will be taking home per month on $300,000 nearly $48,000 more per month than you would have had in 2015 when we came into power. So sometimes, you know, it's good that you have programs like these where people can understand better rather than the propaganda that they sometimes only hear.
Well, like I said, it's limited time, but there's so much I want to get to. Now, one of the other topic that was always making headlines and so on social media and print media is the fact that oil production sharing agreement with Exxon and Guyana, which has been criticized in section of the society. Critics say that Guyana got a poor deal of 2% royalty and 50-50 production sharing. Also, the government got an $18 million US signing bonus, while Suriname, who was just announced a big oil fine, got a $100 million signing bonus. Minister Jordan, you defended Guyana contract by saying that it was informed by national circumstance, and at the time cited the need to acknowledge the context this was done in. If you could, I mean, you know, accounting and economics could be a boring topic, and I'm glad that you're using simple language to clear the air with this. If you could explain to us a little bit about the signing bonus and the fact the 18 million compared to Suriname 100 million.
Well, first of all, we compare cheese and chalk. The 80 million cannot be compared to 100 million simply because the Suriname government never got $100 million. The $100 million was a farming paid to, I think, Apache. Farming means somebody paid $100 million to the owners of that area that they got there to be a part, to become a part of the proceeds that will come from it. Suriname never got no signing bonus of $100 million. So that's clear. The $18 million that we got, I am on record as saying I initially thought it was a gift to Guyana to help with the legal implications that we have had with the controversy with Venezuela. As you know, there has been a long running controversy that was created by Venezuela just prior to us gaining independence when they sought to reopen the border issue. And so this has stymied development in Guyana a lot, because every time we try to get investment in the Essequibo region, Venezuela, you know, puts up a block and so on. So we're trying to get this thing settled once and for all. But it takes a lot of money to go to the World Court, as can be seen when we had our issues with Suriname. The previous government got a gift from, I think it was CGX at the time, when Suriname used gunboats to chase out the investors from the waters, and they got a gift of about $10 million. So technical, I don't know, that could have been treated as a signing bonus before. So similarly here, I personally thought that we had got a gift to help us with the case that we have to go to the World Court to have this matter settled. Later on, I learned that this was a signing bonus. You know, the two things are not necessarily mutually exclusive. You see what I mean? They could have given us a gift and then we talk about a signing bonus, but subsequently it became a signing bonus. But look, I am on record as saying also.
Yes, just let me interrupt. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Given $18 million is no small change.
Correct.
And coming in to see you as a minister, did you not consult with other party officials to figure out, well, or ask the question, $18 million, how could it be a gift to what, the party or the government?
No, to the government to help defray the cost of going to the World Court. You have to pay lawyers, you have to pay researchers, you know, and all these different things to present your case at the World Court. And it is a pretty expensive proposition. But we have to meet it once and for all if we can get the court to first agree that they are the right place to hear this case, and secondly, to prosecute the case. It's not a thing where you can just turn up and so on. We've been at that court now for over a year and a half, I believe, since we have presented the case to them. And we have lots more to do to hire international specialists, to hire top quality lawyers and all this. They don't come cheap, you know. And as I said in the last, with the matter with the CGX, with our maritime borders with Suriname, a gift of $10 million was given by CGX. So in similar vein, I thought this was a gift too.
The oil, and by the way, let me say congratulations not only to the government but the people of Guyana. We saw the first shipment leaving. And I think it was very appropriate to have fanfare to mark that date indeed in history.
But I just want to quickly take 2 seconds, because you did ask me another part about the 50% and the 50% profit.
Oh, yes, sorry, yes.
Yes, you know. Look, again, we cannot compare like with like. The first thing is that everybody in Guyana will tell you they think we had oil. I mean, Brazil had oil, Venezuela got oil, Suriname had a bit of oil, Trinidad, and yet still Guyana, every time somebody came, no oil was being found. Okay. Then secondly, when you attract investment on the ocean floor, you get chased out by Venezuela. The last one being Anadarko. I don't know if you know, but they were chased out by Venezuela gunboat. So nobody wanted to go anywhere near there. It took somebody like Exxon, to be quite honest. Big, multinational, worldwide. And at the time, Exxon also had its issues with Venezuela, if you know anything about Exxon and Venezuela. Their properties were nationalized in Venezuela and so on. So so it took somebody like Exxon to go there in some of the deepest waters ever to take the risk. I think what people don't even understand, that Shell was also part of the original consortium, and Shell pulled out. Shell just gave up their thing entirely for zero, hand it over to Exxon. Secondly, normally the law says 60 blocks. The then president Janet Jagan gave out 600 blocks, just to show you that nobody thought that, you know, nobody, just a track, an investment like Exxon. Okay, so all of that, when you put it, is not circumstances which you can compare with similar places where you hear Brazil get 7%. We're not a Brazil, you know, or some other place get 5%. Okay, 2% in hindsight may be low, 2% royalty may be low, but we have a royalty and profit share contract, and the lowest we can get is 14.5%. The lowest is not stuck at 14.5. When Exxon amortizes their costs, such that instead of cost oil being 75%, but goes down now to maybe 60 and 50, the profit part goes up. And so if it goes down to 60, profit is 40, we get 20 plus 2, which is 22%.
So. And that 50-50, the original for post-production costs.
Yes.
Is there a timetable as to, you know, the exact dollar value that they put out and when that would be at its peak that you could see a profit sharing changing?
Well, initially, their initial expenses were $980 million, roughly, which are now being audited to determine whether that indeed is such. That has to be cleared. And for this well here, they have expenses of a couple billion U.S. dollars, which also has to be, which are now the subject of investigation to determine every bill and everything has to do with this particular well. And you could amortize over a certain period. And so the 75% isn't like an accelerated depreciation. And when it's gone, we're sure that the 75 will go down to 60, and then maybe who knows to 50. But the long and short is, our minimum take is 14.5%.
Now we have oil coming out of we is in Guyana. You know, when we look at in Trinidad. Mm-hmm. The peak oil production in the 70s, I believe, Guyana is projected to pass that in a couple of years.
No, well, that's actually, we passed it already, because the peak daily production in Trinidad was roughly 100-something thousand barrels a day. One well, the existing Lisa 1, will do 120,000 barrels at its peak. In another 2 or 3 months, it will rise up to 120,000. When Lisa 2 comes on stream, we'll be doing 340,000 barrels per day. And that is another year and a half. When Payara comes on stream, which is probably the biggest of them, we'll be doing between 500,000 and 750,000 barrels per day. Right, so Woods and McKenzie estimate that in by the turn of this decade or so, we could be up to 1 million barrels per day.
Now we're talking, and a lot of people don't understand this. Guyana is still seen as a mid-producing oil country, mm-hmm. but with per capita per population, it is indeed one of the biggest.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something interesting, and I want you to take a few minutes to explain to us the national. Resource fund. I think it was, a lot of people don't know, and I just was researching to do this interview with you. That was an exceptional move on the part of your government. Now, if you could tell our listeners why this was done, and this was done in an act of in Parliament to before even oil started coming out of Guyana to ensure that this money is set aside. So tell us a little bit about this National Resource Fund.
Yes, thank you very much. Actually, it is one of the stellar achievements of this government, and we are one of the few countries in the world that has actually put in place a natural resource fund or sovereign wealth fund prior to the start of oil. This fund is in place and is intended to achieve three broad objectives. One, intergenerational equity, because recognizing that our resources must be used by both current and future generations. So we have to save something for those who are not here as yet. Secondly, we have a part that will deal with volatility, recognizing that oil prices are very fickle. And in many cases, the results have shown that you start projects based on a certain price, and then oil prices dip or just plunge. These projects are either mothballed, abandoned, you know, or slowed, or so on. We want to have a fund that will make certain that these projects will continue, even if oil prices dip to a certain level. And finally, the last part of the fund is called developmental, in which there are two parts of the development. The physical development that concerns roads, bridges, new roads, new bridges, airstrips and airports, you know, boats and so on the one hand. And then you have the social development aspect, where we will be looking at capacity enhancement, issues to do with wages, pensions, looking after the vulnerable, the age, the disadvantage, and so on. So that is what that aspect will be doing.
And again, it was put in place before even Abad was
As a matter of fact, yesterday we have been given the all clear by the Federal Reserve of New York to open the account because they had to do due diligence and whatnot. And so that account will start receiving the 2% plus the 12.5% and whatever else in the law that has to go to this sovereign wealth fund. The amazing part, by the way, is that all the resources in connection with oil doesn't pass through the consolidated fund force. It goes directly to the natural resource fund.
And it's an offshore account.
It's an offshore account. Part of the objective is to avoid inflationary impact of a huge sum of dollars flooding the economy, for which will create, every dollar will create 200 and roughly 10 Ghana dollars of liquidity. And you know, you can understand if a huge sum of money start pouring into Ghana, the excess liquidity that will create and the inflationary impact. So we have it out there, number one. Number two, there are rules governing how monies can be withdrawn, stringent rules governing how monies can be withdrawn. Two things. One, we cannot borrow against the fund. In other words, we cannot use the fund as collateral to borrow. And secondly, the fund cannot finance government's deficits. So those are two things this fund cannot do. Any money drawn from the fund has to be drawn for a purpose, a recognized purpose. And finally, the money has to pass through the budget. Any money drawn from the natural resource fund must pass through the budget, which means that Parliament must have an oversight over any withdrawals of the fund money. So very tight, very, very tight rules.
You know, and there's too much to get into about micromanagement of this fund and money, because as the economy as it is now operating prior to 2020, the GDP growth could be influenced by this oil money. So you have to be careful how you transfer funds coming in, because you could kill the economy under micromanagement this other fund. So I noticed too that only a certain percentage would be poured back into, and I mean Guyana has a lot to play catch up with as far as infrastructure, services and so much. So going forward, it's a balance, and I think a lot of people would want to see money. In fact, some believe that they would see overflow of this money coming directly to them. When could Guyana start seeing some real tangible change if your government were to be retained in power?
Yeah, well, I am on record as saying we want to slowly ramp up for obvious reasons. One, even with the existing budgets without oil, we have a difficulty implementing the public sector investment program. You know, this year, I'm looking at the numbers again, we also have seen the difficulty. Well, last year, it might have been a bit of a abnormal year because of things. But we recognize we don't have the skill set. We have all the project ideas. We want a river across the Demerara River. We want a bridge across the Demerara River. We want one across the Essequibo. We want a road going to Brazil. You know, we want a bypass road from Ogo going to Timiri Airport, the Chedijagan Airport, and all these things we want. Rail going to that. But the reality is, we recognize we don't have the skill set. So we have a number of people on training, and together with our diaspora who will feel voluntarily that they can come home because Guyana is on the move, and together with consultants and so on, we will slowly ramp up to a situation where projects can be implemented smoothly and sustainably.
Well, coming back to that diaspora situation, because we're in Canada speaking to the diaspora, we have seen in the past and many times the government of the day invite the diaspora to come back. Many people went and returned. I know it's a different situation now because we have oil. The private sector would be an area where, again, with the corporate taxes and all that, so many people who feel comfortable now to come and set up shop would be given advantage. What else, as attractive as it could be, that would attract the diaspora or foreign investors to come back home?
Well, unlike a foreigner, for me, I think a born Guyanese, and I don't want to discriminate among the classes of Guyanese, but I think a born Guyanese who know about mosquitoes and all kinds of different stories should not have too much holding them back to come and help build a country, regardless of the circumstance under which you live. Guyana is a different place. It's a new place. It's on the move. It's the most exciting country in CARICOM right now, and perhaps even in the Western Hemisphere. When you look at Guyana, we have an influx of large influx, voluntarily and involuntarily, of foreigners. We have 30,000 Venezuelans who are involuntary migrants because of the situation in Venezuela. We have a large number of Brazilians. We have a very large number of Chinese.
Cubans.
Cubans. Trinidadians, who now are flocking to Guyana. So the issue is, these people who aren't natives of Guyana are coming to Guyana. What it is that they're seeing, that they don't need a special invitation from the government to go there. So this is where I put my people, the diasporans, the Guyanese people, born and otherwise. What it is that these people are seeing that you're not seeing. Okay? And they are coming there. They are I was speaking to somebody last night, and they said they were shocked to see how quickly the Venezuelans had integrated into our society, owning businesses, you know, and so on, hairdressing, food, and all this kinds of story. So there is something to say about progress in Guyana. And clearly, if 6.6, nearly 7 billion barrels of oil cannot excite our diaspora, I'm not sure what else we'll be able to do.
Well, Guyana is faced with a serious problem with human resources.
Correct.
Because by the time they play catch up and get the education standard up to date and training, etc., from every area, because Guyana has been brain drained for years.
For years, yes.
It is indeed dependent on the Caribbean and CARICOM neighbors.
Correct.
So Trinidadians, I heard yesterday at a meat shop, Trinidadians, they're taking Guyanese job. Now, I intervened and said, well, they are skilled, and remember, they're well trained. But no, they have some of the jobs they're doing by, but even taking over the transportation and driving people and think, how come Guyanese can't get his job? How you answer that question?
Well, I got in trouble when I answered this question before, but I speak to my truth, as I say. When we left in droves in the 70s, 80s, 90s, and still continue to leave, we took jobs that we could get. And the natives of those countries made the same claims, that Guyanese come taking away the jobs, depreciating their wage rates, and all this kind of story. And maybe. But I don't know that if a cane cutter that came from Guyana and went to Barbados and cut cane, that the Barbadians didn't want to cut, how they were taking away jobs, essentially. And this is the point I made when a couple of weeks ago and took a blast of air from people. I said, look, if I have grass to cut and I'm paying an individual $1,000 to cut this grass, I tell him every 2 weeks I want the grass cut. I can't find the man. I have to go looking all over the place to find him. Next door is a Haitian who is willing, who comes over to me and is halting English, says he can do it for $800. And you say, go ahead, cut the grass. People say, oh, well, you know, now you're going to employ Haitians, you're on the cutting labor and so on. The point is, there are jobs which you can do. There are jobs which are available which you cannot do, but it requires training, and we have a whole set of training free, available in the TechVox stream, at Carnegie, at University of Guyana. We have hundreds of scholarships that we're making available so our people can be trained for jobs that they are not qualified at the moment to do. The oil is a very specialist area, very specialist area. We don't have any experience in oil. Even if we sent many people to Aberdeen University that is known for its qualifications, when they came back, they're still not ready. You have to get the experience and the exposure and so on. So we will get there, but we will not get jobs in oil because it's offshore, very little. But all the inputs that we have to go in to make that oil possible can get, including, say, hotel. We got to up our game, you know, and food. We have to up our game in terms of preparation, housing, you know, all these different things, you know, and where what a Guyanese may pass off, not accept, but may pass off, knowing things and so on. Tourists aren't going to be that sensitive. So we have to up our game, work with those who know the industry, form joint ventures, you know, cooperatives, whatever, so that we can be weaned into the sector.
And again, we are speaking with Minister of Finance, Mr. Winston Jordan, and he's my guest. It's wrapping up this, but I have so much show I wanted to